morning, good morning, and welcome to another show of Business and Legal Talk with Leah Claudine, and I'm fired up today. Good morning, Claudine.
Woohoo, good morning.
Man, I just when the coffee works just the way you're supposed to, it's magic. So I am wide awake.
That's awesome.
So happy Saturday morning, everybody. How is the commute? Well, there's no commute because it's Saturday, so you probably are driving to and from, probably doing the honey-do list, like all of us. I have my own honey-do list. Do you give your husband your
honey? No, I do not give him a honey-do list.
Oh, I got my own.
That's funny. No, I don't.
And Ed is a good man, and he would do everything.
He would. No, he would. He has his own list. He's a very motivated person, so he creates his own list, and I just try to stay out of the way because I am happy with progress on any front. I am easily pleased.
That's good. Well, happy Saturday. So there is we're sort of we got a great show for you today, and this show actually I guess I should give you the title to today's show. How to build and grow a hugely profitable construction business.
Construction, boy, and this is probably one of the most challenging industries.
Yes,
right next to shoulder to shoulder with the restaurant business.
Yes,
very very
the
difficult.
Margin,
a lot
complex,
of moving parts.
A lot of moving parts, and this comes on the heels of me really going after, it's become a passion. I absolutely love working with certain verticals, and the construction industry is just one I have fallen in love with. It's just because you got really one of some of the hardest working people I know are in construction.
Oh, no question. No
Without
question.
Without a doubt. I mean, they have a dream. They whatever trades, you know, because you got the general contractors and you got all the subs in all the trades, right? Whether you're a roofer or you're a finisher, whether you are a concrete person or an electrician, you know, no matter what you do, if you're in the construction, this is going to be a show for you. And there's a lot of potential for profit,
mm-hmm.
but there's a lot of risk. And you're going to help me today with some of the things that you do on the legal side,
yeah.
Claudine.
And it's interesting that you've kind of developed a passion for the construction industry because this is my bucket of babies here.
Real estate. Yeah, real estate construction.
Well, just we've been in the business for so long. My husband's been a general for, you know, going on 25 years at this point. And the industry is set up to put the contractors at a disadvantage.
Yep.
And it's something that just has been a pet peeve of mine. You know, our contractors, our builders out there, and folks, if you're listening and you have a contractor that's coming out maybe to do a bathroom remodel or a kitchen or a roof or landscaping crew, just have some empathy for what they go through. They pay for your entire job before they ever get paid.
Correct.
And
absolutely.
This is something that I'm sure you're going to want to dive into today.
We're going to dive into today.
Because managing that is such a challenge. It is such an incredible challenge.
And we're putting the spotlight in the construction industry. You know, it's the engine that drives the economy.
It is.
You know, back in the recession days in the 30s, it seems like centuries ago, but it was really only in the 30s. So 80 or so years ago, that it was construction and building that mm-hmm. really pulled the country out of recession. You know, the whole Hoover Dam, it came mm-hmm. all these construction projects came out
dams.
Of there. All the dams came out of this recession. So construction is such a key industry that drives growth. It's a growth engine. So a lot of economic indicators point to the construction industry. So we're going to be getting deep into that. We're going to be talking about things like working capital. What does that mean? What is work in progress, or as we know as the WIP reporting, current ratios, and regular accounts receivable versus retention AR, or regular AR versus retention AR, the bonding capacity. And I'm going to talk about a conversation that I have with an underwriter at a surety company that is going to help you. And how does it all play together? You know, how do you grow in, you know, the different key performance indicators in the construction industry, and why should you care?
Right.
Right. And so before we get into that, so want to catch up on things. Any legal updates? I know we like to do our updates.
Yeah. You know, we did have something. Okay. So actually my associate and I were talking today. You know, there's been, we've talked about it on the show a number of times about the whole 1099 independent contractor versus employee, and how the state of California is really moving away from allowing us to even use or be a 1099 independent contractor. So been in the works for quite some time. It's based on a ruling that came down last year, which was, it was just a really... It really kind of turned everything on its head. And so that has been progressing through our legislative process, and it's now sitting at our state Senate, and it's probably going to end up becoming law, just knowing the climate of California and how California, with the kind of public policy that's developing here in the state. But with that being said, we should be kind of keeping our eye on that. It's going to come. It's coming. It's not there yet. But one of the things that we did get a ruling on was whether or not this shift to making everybody an employee or a 1099, if you're trying to remain a 1099, does being a 1099 violate the National Labor Relations Act, which is really a federal act that gives guidance for people and unions. Labor Relations Act is really has a lot to do with the unions, and they have come down and said no. Being a 1099 is and misclassified as a 1099 as opposed to being classified as an employee is not a violation of the National Labor Relations Act. And because being a 1099, being an independent contractor, does not affect your ability to unionize.
Interesting.
So that's, you know, just for us, we find that very interesting, because we knew, you know, once we start to really see big swings or big shifts in how we view or categorize something, it's a reverberation. So what other things does that affect? So it's not just affecting business owners who have used 1099s for a lot of years, and or people who have been 1099s. There's a lot of people who really appreciate being an independent contractor and don't necessarily want to be an employee. But this huge shift is really in swing. And again, it's sitting with the state Senate, and we will probably see a ruling on that.
Really? When this year, do you think?
I think it's possible this year.
Okay, so that's your legal update. That was a nice and meaty update. Thank you so much, Claudine. Yeah. On our side, I mean, on the accounting and finance.
Yeah, what's going on there?
Well, if you got extensions, whether it is corporate or personal, you know, you should be wrapping things up. You know, you got your your 915 and your 1015. You know, it's just around the corner. So for those of you already filed, you know, so if you actually filed an extension, whether it's corporate or personal tax returns, they're becoming due now. So you don't want to get into this habit of just being chronically late, because once you're late, you almost always stay late. And
right.
you want to reverse that trend. So that's one thing. And also on the finance side, you know, as you know, I get involved, and we got a minute left. Wow. We haven't really started. Anyway, on the finance side, interest rates are good. So if you are in the construction business, you know, financing is good. And again, interest rate as a driver of growth, you know, as interest rates go down, it stimulates borrowing and it stimulates spending. So that's actually going very well. It's going in the right direction. So to stay tuned, we're going to be talking about construction and how to, as a business owner, how do you build and grow a hugely profitable construction business? So you are listening to Business and Legal Talk with Leo and Claudine. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to Business and Legal Talk with Leah Clinton. And I misfired a second ago and my mic was not on. So sorry about that. And welcome back. Hey, this is part of having a show, right? So before we get too far down the road on talking about construction and how we're going to help you be very profitable and sustainable. I think it's best that you know who you are. If you're just tuning in for the first time to our show and you want to know what we do, well, I'm going to talk about me and I'll let Claudine explain what she does. But we really come together because we care about being profitable and sustainable. I handle the profitability part and Claudine handles the sustainability part, which she'll talk about. But for me, I care. We're not like your average accounting firm. While most CPA or enrolled agent EA firms are driven by taxation, we are driven by revenue growth. We're driven by managerial accounting. We care about your business being profitable from day one or right. from month over month in variance over variance. We create key performance indicators. We are all about growth and profitable growth. And we do that through a myriad of things. We work with all multiple accounting softwares, and some of them are specific to the construction industry, like Procore and CoConstruct and the like. And why? Because we have a bag of tools available to help you look at the things that matter as when driving, you're looking at a dashboard. We want to make sure all your systems are go so you know when to execute on your plan. So that's what we do. So Claudine, tell us how you help us with risk management.
Well, we do it all completely on the other side. We're looking out the window from the other side of the building. But what we're doing is we're working with clients on a daily basis to help them set up systems that are functional, that are compliant, helping them to protect themselves going into the contract, helping them ensure that they have put systems in place that allow them to get paid on time mm-hmm. and that they're compliant with their regulations. And each one of the industries, has its own set of regulations and compliance concerns. And with the construction industry, it's really, really difficult that, as I was saying in the last segment, mm-hmm. The construction industry is just set up for failure for our contractors. It's, we've got the contractors license board that oversees us, but really, they don't do a whole lot for us on the general basis. They're more for the consumer and to assist the consumer, which is good. We do have to pay attention to the consumer, and we do have to have our contractors, being compliant. And the couple of rotten apples in the bunch, make it bad for everybody. Right. But by and large, our tradesmen and women are out there trying to do the right thing. They are passionate about what they do. They like what they do. They enjoy seeing the transformation of a building. Or just a lot from a lot to a building. And so it's a calling. They're in it because they're passionate, and we work with them to just help them get through each and every job safe and protected. So from everything from indemnity agreements to subcontractor agreements to working with the contractor's license board. If they do get a complaint, we jump right in.
Awesome.
We oversee the license contractor's board's process to ensure.
Really?
Absolutely.
Listeners, pay attention to that.
To ensure that the contractor is being treated fairly. And we've had some really good results recently. We also work with contractors' bonding companies. When a client
Great.
Complains against the bond, we jump in and oversee that the process is done correctly. So
that's like a one-stop shop for the construction industry. Where do we find you?
We are at www.sharon-law.com. or 1101 Stanford Avenue, Suite A1. So we're up here in Modesto. We also have...
But you service the entire state?
Yes, we service the entire state. These days, with technology being what it is, we can do a lot. And really, a lot of our clients are so super busy. It's hard for them to schedule time to actually come into the office and meet. So we do a lot of our consultations and a lot of our work with conference calling. We can do video appointments, and we can do everything
great
over email and that
that's
kind of stuff.
That's great. I mean, and our goal is to eventually syndicate the show so we can be across the country. So we technically can serve clients anywhere because of technology.
Yeah.
So us, you can find us at www.greenland, as in the country of we almost bought of Greenland. HQ.
Yeah. I heard
Greenland.
About that briefly. Were
yeah,
we
it's
buying something?
A funny joke. So greenlandhq.com. If you have any questions, just go to the website. You can find our contact information there, or you can call us at 559-207-3148, 559-207-3148. So back to the show. So I think the best way to start this, unpacking all this knowledge, is talking about the unique slowness of revenue recognition for the construction industry.
Right.
So when we're, you know, there are basically some generally accepted accounting rules according to GAAP as to how do you typically recognize revenue. So it's not, if somebody gives you a $100,000 check and if you put it in the bank and if you haven't earned it, is it revenue?
No.
So no, it's not. So
I know that answer.
Well, you know that one, but you don't count because you're already married into the construction industry.
Right.
Literally married into somebody who does that. And but most people don't know how to quite recognize the revenue. There's two generally accepted methods, and one is the percentage of completion, which is the widely known, and the other one is completed contract. By large, most companies will go percentage of completion. So you got several items or several buckets that you deal with to recognize the revenue, and you got the contract value, whatever it is, you know, the original amount that was signed once you went through the RFI and RFP process, and if you actually got the contract value, so that we start there, and then you got the costs incurred to date, you know, month over month, week over week, quarter over quarter. And then you got the total estimated cost that you started out with when you actually were bidding for the contract. You figure, hey, you know, it's going to be $1 million contract and it's going to be $750,000 worth of cost to deliver it. So we're going to make $250,000 at 25%. Hey, sounds good, right?
Sounds good.
Until you actually start doing the work. And if you didn't do a good job estimating the cost, then you can, if you're not watching this thing, but we're talking about work in progress, it can get you in trouble. This is one of those industries, Claudine, that you can have $800,000 in the bank
and be broke.
And be broke, because if you don't account for all these things that to deliver the contracts to completion, you may be wiping up your entire bank account and don't even know it.
Well, I'll tell you, the contractors, the tradesmen and women out there, you live and die by your estimates. And I work with my clients
on how
to structure your estimates. One of the things I've watched my husband do for years, but now this is just an example from the residential application. He will literally go through room by room. Let's just say we're doing a residential remodel. He will literally go through room by room, and he outlines his estimates and does his estimating room by room.
Wow.
Because it allows him to mentally walk into a room and say, okay, there's X amount of wall space. I need to put X amount of gallons on the wall. It's going to take two coats, so X amount of here. How many switch plates are in this room? And
smallest common denominator.
Yeah, and you kind of think about it as eating the elephant one bite at a time. And I'll tell you, there are folks in this industry that are very, very good at what they do, largely because of experience, and they've lived and died by their estimates.
So we talked about contract value, the costs, the total estimated cost, and then you got the costs incurred today. This is cost-driven by and large. And then you got the project billings. So then you got these four components. So the way I like to visualize this process and see, because so you are creating so the thing about the construction company is you're dealing with, you know, if you're big enough, you're going to have a superintendent who is in the field, right, overseeing the contracts. You got to have the project manager that may be overseeing multiple projects. And if you can't be in two places at once, how can you be actually looking at two sites at once? So as companies get bigger, they need to invest in having people on the ground, you know, boots on the ground, and you have the ones that are actually on the office, and every job is critically important. So then we have this thing called WIP, right? So you got your revenue, and you got an adjustment. If you're a construction guy who actually looks at your accounting, your bookkeeping, I don't recommend that you do the bookkeeping, but that you need to have an idea of what your WIP adjustment is from month over month. Now, as a rule of thumb, if you build 100% of what you're supposed to be billing, so you have your cost and you're exactly where you should be and your percentage of completion, your variance is zero. Meaning that you have no over and under billing. So let me define that. So so there's two types of variances. You got your, when you overbill for something in accounting, if you haven't earned it, that's not an asset, it's a liability.
Okay.
Right? So when you have done the work and you earned the revenue, but you haven't billed it, that's an asset. But is that good? That's not a good thing if you're. It can hurt your cash. Okay. So I know you're looking at me like it's, I know. Wish you had a flow chart or something.
Yes, a whiteboard.
So a whiteboard, yeah. So I live in the world of liabilities, equity, and assets.
Okay.
So if you follow me, and overbilling is good in principle. So if you're ahead of budget by 10%, which means that you've been a very shrewd operator and you want the clients to fund the work and you're just ahead of it. Right? You follow me?
No. When you say overbilling is good, okay, so in my world, that says my brain's screaming right now. What do you mean overbilling
so,
is good?
Let's keep it simple. You're at $10 million, so you're a $10 million company.
Okay.
Right? And you're, so you're doing about, you know, $800,000 and change, $833,000 a month, right? You can be up to $83,000 a month ahead of billing. And be okay according to a surety company.
Meaning you're completing the project sooner than you thought you were, so you're
billing
sooner.
No, you're just a little ahead of it. Okay, remember what I said? Zero is better. If you had a choice, let me put it to you this way. Zero is perfect. If you had a choice between being overbilled and underbilled, which would you rather be?
Underbilled.
Well, but
we're using these terms in completely different definitions. I can see that. Overbilling means that you're billing me more than you should be.
Yes. And that's okay.
But that's not okay ethically.
I know, but there are, yeah. So somebody is financing the job. Either you're financing the job, you know, if you're doing your job right, of course, you're going to make enough profit to actually finish the project.
Right.
What I see happening is, in reality, forget about the textbooks.
Okay.
You got construction companies in two categories. Either they're severely underbilling for work that is a bit and being completed, which means it's hurting their cash, or they're grossly overbilling, which you're right, right? How much can you ask for stuff you haven't done yet, but then you're asking the client to prepay for stuff that you haven't done yet? You are in danger of running out of cash. Those are triggers for me.
But clients don't prepay for stuff.
Sometimes they will just think, you know. So think about it from this. I got guys in the construction business that I know. So typically, as the project manager, that will look at, they will look at the paperwork and say, hey, you know what, drywalling. How are we doing with that? So if you're not on site, you're gonna rely on somebody from your team to tell you, hey, drywalling is about 70% done.
Right.
Right. But then the sub sends you an invoice up to 80%.
I see. And so then, so just to clarify for people who are listening, your reference is really on the larger commercial type projects.
Yes.
This is not what the residential contractors do.
Right. No. This is 10 million, you know, $5 to $10 million. You know,
okay.
Most average construction size companies probably be around somewhere between 5 and 15 million. So that's. And lower.
Yeah.
Lower?
I think your average contractor is significantly lower than that.
Well, not the ones that I'm dealing with are much bigger, I guess.
Well, okay, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, big commercial outfits are certainly like that.
So there is that. So I'm going to be cutting that to break pretty soon, but this is a very important concept that I want us to live with. You want to be managing your project so you're billing what you're supposed to be billing every month.
Right.
Fair enough?
Right.
So, hey, you're listening to Business and Legal Talk with Leo and Claudine. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Okay. Very good.
Welcome back, everybody. This is, you're listening to Leo and Claudine, Business and Legal Talk with Leo and Claudine, and I am Leo.
And I'm Claudine.
And we had a vigorous discussion in the last segment. This is a topic that I guess we can make two or three shows out of.
Oh, easy.
And we haven't even started talking about anything else other than work in progress. So
We're
still on page 107 pages. So clearly there's going to be another show. But let's stop right now and move on to sort of kind of a larger plane, if you will.
Okay.
So the construction business is like any other business. It has these nuances, which those are the details, but it's still a business and it must be profitable. So the construction business is driven by the work that is done,
mm-hmm.
the cost of goods. Usually, if you're a prime, you have all the sub work and all the indirect costs associated, direct and indirect costs associated with the job. You got your gross profit and you got your general administrative expenses, your G&A, and at the bottom you have net profit. What makes the construction business so unique is retention. So once you, it is typical in the construction business that you have 10% of your billings retained till the end of the project.
Right, correct.
Once you go through the punch list, that's standard, right? So this is pretty well, it's just common knowledge if you're in the construction business. So if you have a $1 million job, you're going to bill up to 900,000, and then you're going to wait for the project owner, the client, to sign off and pay you the rest.
Right. And now, lien release time.
Right. And all of that. And all the legalities that come with it that you
right.
do. On my side is, it depends where you are in the process. So you could be a prime and be dealing with 20 subs, and each sub, you know, you got the roofing, you know, you got the electrical, you got the concrete. Let's take, for example, it comes to mind a concrete subcontractor, right? Works in a subcontractor in most of the jobs, right? And dealing with primes. And the concrete work, is it done at the beginning or at the end? Mostly at the beginning, right?
Well,
so you got to lay the foundation. That's foundational work. So you may be doing 20, you know, 30, and then you do, you know, 40. So you're, you know, within 3 months, you exhausted 90% of your billing and your work is, then you have to wait for everybody else to do their work. And then, depending on how long the job is, how big the job is, you can be waiting 6 months to a year for the job to finish. And that applies for everybody that is doing work. So think about it this way. If I recommend that you have gross profit of at least 20%. Now, why? Because 10% of that will be retained. Now, can you imagine? So if you got 20% and you got 10% of general administrative costs and you have 10% net profit, well, if all that profit is held back in retention, how much money do you have in the bank? Enough to pay your bills, apparently.
Right.
So that's the thing that you have to know as a construction company. You need to know all the moving parts, and you have to be involved. You cannot be an absentee owner on a construction business.
No.
Because it spells trouble. Now, remember what I was saying the last segment, that you could have $800,000 worth of money sitting in the bank. And if you're not careful, and if you're not managing the business, ideally, you done the work at the end of the month or whenever you do that during the month, create the invoicing so you are exactly where you should be as a percentage of completion,
mm-hmm.
right? So if you're in a one-year job and you do 1/12 every month, by 6 months, you should be at 50%, you know, completion of the project, which means that you would have had incurred 50% costs, and you have the markup, and you should have billed that, and you should have zero work in progress variance or WIP variance. But mostly I'm talking about hypothetical. Is that what happens in real life? What do you think?
No. And again, similar to the restaurant industry, the construction industry is play by play. It really, you know, you have a set of goals when you go into it. You have a set time frame. You have a budget. You have you know, an idea of what you're doing, but as sure as you get started, things change. And the thing I think everybody needs to understand, particularly as part of the conversation that we're having right now, is the construction industry is as diverse as, say, the medical industry,
right,
where there are small doctor's offices, there are clinics, there are enormous hospitals, and they're all part of the medical industry, but they're incredibly diverse on how they each function in,
right,
you know, and the construction industry is the same. As we have big contractors, construction companies that are doing, you know, very, very large projects, and they're civil projects where we're working for the government, we're working for the city, the state, you know, whatever. And those come with their own set of rules and prevailing wages and so forth. And then there's other people who are independent. And then there's the middle of the road people who maybe have a crew of, you know, 40 or 50, and they're in a single trade. And so, you know, maybe you have an electrical company or HVAC company, and they're a single trade, but they do a certain volume of work. And so their work is a lot of doing the same thing over and over again. Whereas if you are a general contractor, you are not doing the same thing over and over again. You are overseeing multiple trades. So it's a vastly different set of circumstances that you're working with. So just to kind of lay the foundation for the conversation that we're having, mm-hmm. Is that we probably identify there are overall practices that are good regardless of where you are in the industry. But there are also some things that are going to be more particular to a particular type of industry. So I think that's important to kind of note as we're having this conversation.
Yeah, I mean, it's... I'm very passionate about a certain industry. You know, I love the restaurant industry. I love the software industry. I am falling in love with the construction industry because I see that what we do.
Oh, I know why.
Well,
it's a challenge for you.
Yes.
Because there's so many moving parts.
Right.
And you love that.
And I love solving. You're right. Okay.
I know.
Claudine knows me. All right. For the record, she knows
let's
how
not,
I think.
Let's not fool
like
anybody here.
Yeah, I love challenges. And I think what I love about the construction industry, there has a lot of moving parts. And you're right, Claudine. But the potential for you and me and any advisor to do good is great.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because it's impossible to become an expert at any one thing. It takes a lifetime. Like if you know the things that you have to do on your side to make sure that your clients, who happens to be construction companies, Claudine, you have to be in the up and up with everything. We just talk about lien releases and things like what happens when a job goes wrong, what happens with the bonding capacity, which we haven't talked about. You know, what is unique to the construction industry is that it is, you know, you shake hands on a deal and then you have a contract. I mean, the end result is that in exchange for money, you're going to finish a project, right?
Right.
Regardless of the amount, it's going to be released. It's going to be operational. It's going to be a construction project that is going to be very successful and it's going to empower many lives. But what if you get ill or something happens to you or you become insolvent? Who's going to finish that project? You know, don't you love driving down the freeway and you see that building that has been sitting there in construction for years? It's an eyesore, right? So what's unique to the industry is also this whole thing about ensuring that the jobs are finished and signed off on and delivered.
Right.
And that's where you have this bonding capacity. So you're right. There's a lot of things. So what I like to do right now is just talk about certain things that key performance indicators, as I like to call them, that are things that you want to be looking at every week and every month when you have your financials. Number one is net income, right? Either you're running a profitable business or you have a very expensive hobby. And who has time for that?
Right.
So are you profitable? Are you profitable not just in the overall of your company, which is the aggregate of all the jobs that you have? So you have 10 jobs. You want to know that all 10 jobs are profitable. Is it meeting your... Are they making enough profit to cover your overheads and then some, and to have you for you to have a profitable business? So net income. Number two is cash flow. Now, I don't live in the cash world. I'm as much as I like to talk about cash because we like to run the business on accrual. So you know we had this conversation before.
Right.
Accounting an accrual basis means that you recognize the income when it happens, hence you have the earned revenue, and you recognize the expense when it happens, regardless of when it gets paid. On a cash basis, you recognize it when you pay it, and you recognize the revenue when you deposit the check. But cash flow in an accrual world, it's a lot more complicated than that. So it's what happens if you make, you know, what happens if you don't pay everything, or if you paid everything, what happens to the net income? And do you make all your AP payments? Do you collect all of your AR? And so that's a very critical thing. And that's one. So the number one is net income. Number two is cash flow. Number three is the borrowing capacity, which is, are you bankable?
Yeah.
As a construction company.
And that's very, very difficult. And I kind of want to go back to net income. One of the things that we see, particularly the smaller independent contractors not doing, is really doing effective job costing. Mm-hmm. And I know that you, your company as a service provides job costing.
Absolutely.
For contractors. Mm-hmm. And I highly, highly recommend, if you are out there in the world and you're busy right now, construction is really busy. We are probably the industry right now, and I think Matt touched on this a few weeks ago when we had Matt on the show. The construction industry is one of the industries right now with the highest competitive areas for retaining employees.
Yes, that's right.
So super busy.
Super competitive.
But with that being said, if you're finding that you don't have time to job cost each and every one of your jobs, please hire somebody to do that, because that is really your only way to determine whether or not you're actually doing a net profit of any sort. Not only that, over time, it will cause your estimates to get better and you'll be more on point when you're going into the project.
You nailed it. You sound like an accountant now.
No, I'm not an accountant. I'm just a pragmatic. I think
From
a logistics standpoint, when I do deal with contractors who come to me, I like to deal with them proactively prior to them there being a problem. However, we do what we do. But that is an area that we do want to provide coaching to clients on, is really... That's how you stay out of trouble. And you stay out of trouble when your numbers are right, because when your numbers are not right, then you're robbing Peter to pay Paul to get through a job. And then you have a complaint from a customer and it's just snowballs. If you can keep those numbers right, you can work effectively. And job costing is, I can't stress the importance of that, and change orders. And that's for another subject.
Oh, yes.
And change orders.
You mean approved change orders that are fully executed?
Highly like fully executed, but we have a program in case you don't get it executed. We have a plan B.
I'm so glad you're on the show. Yes. This is what you do. So
plan B.
So let's not forget what the show is all about. It's about building a hugely profitable construction business. All of these things are tools in the toolbox and more. And they're like key things that you got to look at every month to make sure that you stay profitable. Once you get to profitability, you got to stay profitable. Net income, you should be aiming for at least 10%, if not higher. I'll say north of 15%. Why? Because so if that's the case, into simple math, if you happen to achieve a great gross profit margin of 25%, and if your operating expense, your G&A is 10%, you sure gonna have 15 cents fall to the bottom line, assuming you collect everything. So what's important to know, all of these things, is it's not just one ratio. It's not just what percentage you have in work in progress. Is the aggregate of is your current ratio and your debt service coverage ratio, which we're going to talk about in the next show, and your debt to equity ratio. All of those shows play into if you're bankable enough for you to get the money that you need to continue to grow the business. So right now, stay tuned, but there's a lot more to cover, believe it or not. You're listening to Business and Legal Talk with Lee and Claudine. We'll be right back. Welcome back, as I'm waiting for my producers to give me the okay. Hey, this has been such a great show. For those who are just tuning in, this is you're listening to Business and Legal Talk with Lee and Claudine, and we're all about helping you build a business that is profitable and sustainable. And according to our producer,
Off-mic conversations
are just as exciting as the on-mic conversations. Why? Because we just have this passionate back and forth about how to grow each other's businesses. So, Claudine, I mean, I don't know about you, but this has been a great show.
This is fantastic. No, and I honestly, we should definitely need to circle back around, because there's a lot of things that you're bringing up that I know people who are out there in the trades are listening, and there it's either sparking something in their mind, or you know, oh, I need to do that, or that's something I should really be focusing on, or it's raising another question, and that we should be circling back around. And I really want to encourage anybody who's listening, if you hear something on the show that either raises a question for you, or you're not really clear and you want a little bit more information, please hit us up on the website, or yes, hit us up on the email, or give our office a call. We definitely want to follow up and finish questions and finish concepts that maybe we've touched on here on the show. But you know, for whatever reasons, it's sparking some kind of interest, or you want to follow up. And I know we've had a couple of clients, say that we've said something on the show.
Yeah.
And then, you know, all of a sudden it made them think. I think one that just comes to mind is, you know, we were talking about payroll and pay subs and, mm-hmm, and what things that needed to be on pay subs. And we had several people, I think, went back to their offices and looked at the pay stubs, and, you know, we got phone calls. It was like, holy moly, we're not in compliance. So just don't hesitate. I know if you're out there, you're probably, you know, either working, listening to the radio, or driving, listening to the radio. Give us a call and follow up on it, because a lot of what we're talking about, we're just barely scratching the surface.
We're just
barely. And there's
so
much
8 hours
to it. Yeah.
On this, and it wouldn't that be enough? It's because our passion is it, and we wish we could just transfer our knowledge to you that has been hard earned over years on seeing what worked, that doesn't work. This is actionable stuff. If you're doing some of the things that we're talking about today, you'll be better apt to getting financing if that's what you need, or actually getting bonded for bigger jobs.
Yeah.
So I want to, there's two things I want to talk about before we wrap things up in the last segment, is bonding and financing. So, bonding is your ability to be insured against, you know, unfinished jobs. And surety companies are the ones that actually insure for, you know, there's two types of bonding criteria. One is per job, and the other one is on the aggregate of all the jobs. And typically what you know, the goal is to get 10 to 1 aggregate to bonding it. So there's a ratio that you want to go for, and this 10 to 1. What does that mean? So you get, on average, $10 for every dollar of equity you have in your business. And that equity comes from your balance sheet. And what is your balance sheet? It's probably the most important financial document on your business. And it's going to play into the financing part that I'm going to be talking about next. So for your bonding capacity, your assets equals liability plus equity. The very last section of your balance sheet is your equity. It's either going to be hopefully a plus, not a minus. But say, for instance, that you have $500,000 worth of equity in your business. So that times 10 is $5 million. It would be the aggregate bonding capacity that you would have for you to be covered, and which is not for you. It gives the client the certainty so they can check it off their list that you're able to finish and you have the adequate means to finish any job.
Right.
The second portion is, and that plays out in the balance sheet mostly, is your current ratio. So let me talk about, this is something that I am dealing with just about every other day basis, is banking and financing. So a bank is going to look at three things for just about any business. One, they're going to be making sure that you're profitable, right? And profitable to the tune that they can calculate your maximum debt service coverage ratio, which is the DSCR. That means your cash flow over your debt service. So if you're getting a loan and your debt service, which is your principal and equity, is going to be $100,000 a month, they want to make sure that you can cover that at least 20% more. So your net income is going to be $120,000 a month. So 1.2 over 1. So if you missed all that, you know, there'll be a transcription of the show eventually. You can actually go find it. I think it's very important that you know your debt service coverage ratio. Second is your current ratio. And your current ratio is something that I've talked about before in other shows, which is your current assets over your current liability. What are your current assets? It's anything that you can liquidate to cash within 12 months. Obviously, your cash, right, and your money market accounts, your accounts receivable is huge, and your current assets and your current liabilities are all the liabilities that are due within a year. Now, here's the magic number. The magic ratio is 1.5 to 1.
Meaning?
meaning that you're going to have 1.5 times more current assets than you do current liabilities, which in construction is actually the definition of working capital, is your current assets minus your current liabilities.
So give examples of current assets, not just the assets that the company owns. Are contracts considered an asset? So I have a contract to do a $100,000 job or a $10 million job. Is that considered an asset?
It'll play into the surety. It'll play into future work, and which is, you know, technically is unearned revenue because you may have the contract, you haven't done any work on it. So the current ratio, your current assets, what are they? You earned the revenue, you billed it, but you haven't gotten it paid. So it is produced an invoice that you're reflecting your profit and loss, but you haven't collected it, may or may not have collected. So say if you have $500,000 in your bank account, right? But remember what I said, don't get too excited when you have $500,000 and you're in construction, that money can be gone tomorrow. But say you do have $500,000 and you have $1 million worth of AR. So your current assets are $1.5 million. You know, other prepaid stuff can be part of it as well. But you got that. And the biggest current liability is your accounts payable. Then you got your unfunded payroll liability if you're doing accrual for your payroll. And any other debt that must be paid within 12 months. So the sum of that, say it was $1 million to keep it simple. So you have $1.5 million worth of assets, current, meaning that can be liquidated to cash, over current liabilities. So here's the way the bank thinks about it. They're thinking you're going to fail.
Oh, of course.
Now, is the bank is there to make you profitable? No. Do you know one thing the bank cares about the most?
How much they get repaid. How much money they make.
How much money they make on you, right? Not disrespect to banks, but this business is business. But it's also comes another thing come out of it is your working capital. In construction, you're going to hear a lot about working capital, right? Which short definition is take what we've been talking about. So your working capital is your current assets. Let's go back to that example. $1.5 million worth of current assets minus $1 million worth of current liability. So your working capital is $500,000. That plays an important role, but that's just, so we talked about that, right? So we talked about the debt service coverage ratio, 1.2 to 1. You got your current ratio, 1.5 to 1. And last but not least is your debt to equity. So banks will finance you somewhere between 250 and $3 per every dollar of equity that you have. So if you have $500,000 worth of equity, you can go up to $1.5 million worth of financing. So all of those things, and then begin to add or take away depending. So if you have a lot of, so remember the whole thing about overbilling and underbilling. Overbilling is a liability. It's a current liability. You collected it, but you haven't really earned it. And then underbilling is an asset, but it's not good for cash because you may have earned a revenue, but you haven't billed it, so it's not sitting on your bank account. So that plays into your current ratio too. So that's why I love construction, because there's a lot of moving parts, right? Everything is a puzzle that you have to put back together. So remember those things, and you got to stay on top of your work in progress. I know that we need to wrap up this show. So any final thoughts on this, Claudine? I see you're
No. Whenever you
dying to say something.
Whenever you get deep into the numbers, I start to lose track. I mean, I'm following along because we have talked on a number of the shows about bank, and obtaining capital. And bank financing, and that I think this is the resounding kind of overarching message is that you have to have your ratios correct, and a lot of people just don't look at those ratios. They literally, and unless you're managing your day-to-day numbers, you will have no idea what your ratios are. And by the way, a lot of lending, there is a caveat in the contract that you will maintain certain ratios.
Right. So, and we were just dealing with a situation like that with a client.
So heads up, read the fine print. Definitely don't enter one of these
Covenants.
Yeah, contracts without, having a real, real strong understanding of what your contract means. Because once you do that and you go into default, we lose our options.
While we're on the subject, don't ever look at a contract you have to sign that you have to personally guarantee without having someone like Claudine look at it.
Yeah.
On the legal side and on the business side, you got to have somebody who knows what ratios you're going to be adhered to. So it's an open book test. So have somebody like me or somebody who understands ratios and understands bank financing and understand how that plays into your financial roadmap that can help you with that.
And don't feel overwhelmed by it. If this is something you're not currently doing, if you're really saying to yourself, boy, I don't really watch my numbers very well, I don't like doing it, don't really want to do it, hire somebody to do it. It's worth, and it's not that expensive in the scheme of things. It's really not all that expensive. And somebody else can do it, somebody who loves to do it, and it'll provide you the guidance that you need. So if you're one of those who just does not have an interest in numbers, and I suggest that you just, it's something you can absolutely hire somebody who loves to do it.
So it's been a great show. Thank you so much. Call us, 559-207-3148 or
209-427-2200.
Hey, it's been a great show. Take care, everybody. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you.